Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Confessions. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Meg, who is here to speak with us about her recent recording and listening article blog. Welcome, Meg.
Hello.
Hey, Meg, I'm going to start with a sound check only because our signal at the monastery has been so poor lately. Are you hearing me okay?
I can. You're crystal clear.
Perfect. Yay.
And it's those
so,
little wins.
What's that?
I said it's those little wins.
It's those little wins, exactly. So, yeah, you wrote a really fun article. I really enjoyed it recently in the recording and listening blog. For folks who don't know it, there's an entire beautiful website, recordingandlistening.org, and we regularly have seasoned practitioners write about their experience of using the tool of recording and listening. And you wrote an article that I thought would be fun to have you on the show and talk a little bit about that.
Great. Well, I'm glad to be able to participate in this way. It was fun to write it.
Yeah.
So, you know, one thing that I was noticing when I was writing it, and also when I was looking at what I was appreciating when I was writing it, and then when you were asking about talking, you know, coming on today, was the beauty of recording and listening, that it's like that. There's kind of like a never-ending amount of ways to utilize it and to work with it and to keep coming back, you know, to now and to be like, oh, wow, right, that's right there. I can use that. All the different ways that we can use it, yeah.
You used a beautiful image in it of dusting off the jewels. Because I think what you were talking about, which maybe you'll say a little bit more about, but was a particular exercise that the guide had walked us through, and that in using that exercise, you kind of had that experience of like, wow, this is like, you know, oh, right, as you're saying, there's this whole other way that I can use the same tool that I use all the time, and it's part of my practice, and it's part of my life, and here's this other way of using it and kind of seeing another facet of the jewel.
Yeah. In the Going Beyond Fear, Limitations, and Resistance retreat, that you know we've said that you know that's like the closest thing for the folks like me who can't be at the monastery all the time as a monk. It's like the closest thing to that. It's like a quick path into like, okay, like let's just see all that's there for us to work with.
Exactly.
And one of the reasons why it is like that is that we get to do things like that mini little workshop within the retreat of, okay, let's look and see about being lit up and what does that look like, and what does that look like in especially for each person that's in the retreat, and that while there's a process there, there's also it's going to be, you know, similar and unique for each person, and getting to make those recordings and then having the encouragement to keep the focus on that, on being lit up, and getting to add to that and looking at all the ways in which our lives are in fact completely and utterly lit up, and how we get talked out of seeing that and being that, and it was an amazing thing to be guided by the guide around that, and then be able to just keep checking in throughout the week around what we were seeing.
Yeah, exactly. The week, and then I think the assignment went
through.
That's
right, the month. That's right, exactly. Yep.
Yeah, and that was one of the things I really enjoyed about what you laid out, Meg, in your article, is just that sense of, you know, in this case, what the mini workshop was around is, you know, being lit up, and what in particular lights this human up, and I like the way you described that, that being lit up is a process, and there are going to be particulars for each person, right? And so then kind of looking at that and making recordings about that and assisting this person, you know, to have that experience, and then staying with it. And I think that's one of the pieces that's so powerful, that just about everyone gets talked out of in just about every area of their lives I mean, I think it's what we're looking at in the year-long retreat over and over again. But
yes.
What is that process of staying with it, even as you point out several times in the article, even when, quote, I don't feel like it, which is a big way people get talked out of it.
Yeah. And what I remember, too, that the guide was speaking to and that we got to see a little bit was just that how much, well, one, to keep staying curious.
Uh-huh.
In it, uh-huh. Right, and that there would be resistance because a lot of the what we're looking at, you know, is resistance to being lit up. Like it's conditioning, it doesn't know lit up, it doesn't want us to be lit up, and so there would be a lot of that, and that to just keep going, to keep doing the recordings, to keep listening to recordings, no matter what. No matter, it kind of reminds me, I think we talked a little bit in the year long and then another place, you know, just like the, picking, like, I'm going to tap my head 3 times when I wake up, or I'm going to make gassho when I walk through each doorway of, you know, my dwelling, right? And
you
do it no matter what.
Exactly.
And getting to see through in that, you know, so seeing in that and then also like how we get talked out of it. But then also when you get to listen to the actual recording, how kind and loving and supportive, you know?
Yeah, that when you listen back to the recording that you made for, quote, yourself, which is so funny because it doesn't feel that way, does it? Like it so often feels like, wow. She made that recording for me. Wow, you feel so loved, right? Like someone else truly stopped, took the time, which I think is a huge part of it, Meg, right? Because there's that place we were, I think we were talking about this in group recently with Sherry at the end of the There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat, but that place where this attitude of mind of like, you know, I'm me and I can treat me however I feel like it. So if I don't feel like supporting her today, if I don't feel like taking the time to listen, then that's fine. It's my choice. It's just me, right? But to realize when we have the experience that you're describing where we do stay with it and we stay with it even when I doesn't feel like it, to me, part of what's so lovely in that is that the human being has such an experience for. She's more, in this case, she, for both of us, she's more important than that what conditioning feels like in a given moment.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And what I was seeing and get to continue to see is that when she is supported, right, then all the things she's wanting for her life and that life is wanting for her, kind of being one and the same when in presence, right, are completely supported, and that there's so much available, and all those things that she wants to do, you know, again in quotes, right? Or, you know, are done, you know, or you know, maybe they move to the next year, whatever. But it's all in acceptance and all okay, and there's plenty of everything for the person who's attempting to live this, you know, amazing life.
Yeah. Boy, that's such a good point. That what I really hear in that, as you're saying that, is that, you know, that quote, I don't want to, you know, I mean, that's the title of the book, It's Going Beyond Resistance, is I don't want to, I don't feel like it. And then what we, the big breakthrough I think we can have in that is to realize that's not, that I is not me. That I that doesn't want to, that I that doesn't feel like it is not me. And so when those things align in what you were saying, when we're in presence, what the human wants is just what's here. And then that mentoring presence supports her to have that and supports, to, in my experience, does all the things, I was just looking at this with someone, does all the things that are needed to support that, make sure she has plenty of water, she's hydrated, she has good food to eat, she's rested, you know, all those things. And that gives her the fuel, the place from which to, you know, continue in the ways that she wants to continue and not be vulnerable to those conversations that will pull her out of that presence.
That will, you know, the resistance and limitation you know, that the ego will put in her way to, you know, or anybody's way, you know, to transport her from the thing. And then having those, you know, different recordings of like, well, what is it that this person wants? You know, let's see what we can do to support her in that. You know, so that if she's getting talked out of it because there comes resistance or a limited, you know, like, oh, no, you can't. Well, yes, yes, you can. We're right here for, you know, Liz here. We're setting that up. You know, we're getting, like, as you said, her water, you know, all the water she needs, the sleep she needs, everything she needs to be here to receive what is so and what is, you know, next. So it's, I mean, how fun.
so fun. And just, I know we got to pass the show back over to Sherry and Michael, but I love that, Meg, that last piece that you said of making the recordings, which I think was a big part of that mini workshop, to remind us of what the human does want for her life, because it's so funny, right? Because how often do we get to that place of, wait, what am I doing? You know what, that stupid dust place, right? What was so important? This seems, why did I want to do that, right? But I've got this recording here that tells me exactly what, and tells
that's
me,
right.
And that's what, again, that was one of the things that struck me so much about your article, is that you just kept talking about every time conditioning would try to take you into one of those cul-de-sacs, it would just drop in. Oh, no, wait, I'm going back to that recording. I'm going back to that recording. I'm going back to
that's
that
right.
recording.
It's so powerful, and it hasn't stopped. I mean, it's one of those, like I said, Dan, too, like it gets to be a tool that I'd be added to the toolkit and continue with, you know, because it is such a powerful thing. So I'm grateful to get to talk about it today, and grateful that I got to write it, because I think, you know, it's one of those things where sometimes you don't even get to see, you see it, but then you get to see it again when you're going to write it, or you talk about it, or just share. Right, so it's just so fun to see all the different aspects of it. Everything, something new comes out each time. So thank you.
Exactly. The more you give, the more you get. Right.
Exactly.
All right. Well, thanks for being with us, Meg, this afternoon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Have a great show. Okay.
Take care.
You too.
All right, Michael. We'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Wonderful. Thank you, Ken, and thank you, Meg. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael. How you doing?
How are you? I'm great. How are you?
Really good, and better after that little conversation. I'm feeling quite lit up from that conversation.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I could feel the energy.
Yeah, I just love that. The image of conditioning tries to drag you off into a cul-de-sac, and wait, I'm going to listen to that recording. I'm going to listen to that recording every time something is unpleasant and distressing, and the voices are wait. I have that recording, and just the shift in attention. I was talking with somebody a little bit ago about that, because he was saying that. There's all the resistance to doing the recording. And then as soon as he starts, just a little while after he starts the recording, he realized he's totally into it. I said, that's because we can only attend to one thing at a time, right? And most of the time what we're attending to is whatever conditioned mind is offering us. And if we can say, pick up that recorder, you know, pick up that recorder, resistance, it's going on, turn it on, start recording, and about there, I'm completely into it. And conditioning doesn't have a chance after that.
Yes, it's just picking up the recorder.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Yeah.
I have announcements here.
All right.
Bring conscious, compassionate awareness to your Saturday tasks or any project you choose at an at-home working meditation retreat on August 24th. The day includes exercises, facilitated virtual discussions, mindful eating, and designated work periods.
Such fun.
Also, yes. Also in August, a six-week conference call retreat in recording and listening training. We'll teach six key skills of the recording and listening practice. We think you will find these calls to be fun, experiential, and transformative. The new class is on Thursdays, beginning August 29th.
Barely in August.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And the Family Karma Retreat in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania is not an exploration of childhood trauma or family dynamics from a content perspective, but an investigation of the ego, of the story of me. Through this exploration, we will be able to see how that story dominates us today and will practice the tools needed to transcend ego's control.
Mm-hmm.
This retreat, This retreat, September 2nd through 7th, includes yoga, meditation, and guidance with you, Sherry.
Mm-hmm.
And right before that retreat, on Sunday, September 1st, spend an evening with you, Sherry, in York, Pennsylvania, on the topic of practicing in difficult times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that retreat that Meg mentioned, the going beyond fear, resistance, and limitation, that we're doing a thing on that on Sunday afternoon. So if anybody wants to know about that, you're welcome to join us that too.
Got it. So that'll be in York, Pennsylvania also?
In York also.
Yep.
It's a hotbed. Yeah.
Hotbed of awareness practice.
That's right.
And the powerful There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat offers foundational work in going beyond self-hate that is challenging, joyous, scary, and loving, and among the most important work you will ever do. And a retreat is coming up in October.
Mm-hmm.
And
we just had one of those, you know. And
yes,
there were some lit up folks coming out of that thing, I'll tell you.
Great. Great.
Yeah.
That's fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
And for these and other practice opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And if you'd like to talk with Sherry today, you can make a show and get in the queue by pressing *6 and then 1. And a conversation of about 5 minutes on one topic is great. Okay, and I think we're ready for our first caller, Sherry.
All right, here we go.
Here we go. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Autumn. I just left the There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat on Saturday.
Aha. Uh-huh. Are you one
Hi,
of those
Autumn.
Lit up people I just described?
That's me. Yes,
All
ma'am.
Right.
Hi.
All right. Well, tell us a little about that, please.
So in the last 72 hours, I feel like I've been sort of all over the planet. The drive back home, I was singing along to love songs and laughing about how it didn't feel like it was like a love song made for two people. It was a love song written for me and me. And so it was really fun. And I was just on this retreat high for, you know, a good 24 hours. And it was really funny to me to bring back to my life, which was the same, this person that felt really different. And
yeah.
Trying to figure out how do I fit this person into that life and bumping up against all this, these rough spots. I had scheduled a bunch of stuff before the retreat. I had made sure, I was like, you know, after I'm going to be by myself and reflective for 7 days, I need to have stuff to do when I get home. And so I scheduled a ton of stuff for yesterday and today. And then I canceled a bunch of it because I was like, I can't be doing all of that, and it doesn't feel right and useful. It feels like a way to get away from my mind, but I don't feel like my mind, I need to get away from my mind right now. So
uh-huh.
that was really interesting, this feeling of I've always, the way that I've escaped the voices has been to keep myself really, really busy. And I don't do one thing at a time. I listen to music and podcasts and talk on the phone with people. And I'm always engaged in something because as soon as things get quiet, there comes the voices. And so now I'm back home and I'm realizing that what ends up happening is I feel really overstimulated and I start to feel stressed. And I'm sort of just watching and noticing that part of my life that I didn't notice before.
Yeah. And it would be easy for the voices to convince a person, well, there's something wrong. Right? Right? I mean, you were probably better off before because at least you weren't aware of all that stress, right?
Right.
But
absolutely.
That doesn't mean it's not taking a horrible toll on us just because we're not sensitive to it. Yeah.
That's exactly what it feels like. As I was going about my day doing the same things that I've always done, you know, listening to a podcast while I drive my car, chatting with a friend while I'm shopping at Trader Joe's, when I hung up the phone and set my car, I thought, gosh, that was really stressful. To just be doing so many things at one time feels really stressful all of a sudden. And it didn't feel stressful before, but it doesn't mean that it wasn't. It just means I was acclimated to a certain level of stress.
Yes.
So that's
trained not to notice.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's what conditioning does to us. It just trains us not to notice.
Yeah. And the other thing that I noticed that's been really glaring in the last 48 hours is how often my connections with other people center around what's not good enough or okay about them or their life or their situation. Not that, you know, they don't tell me what's wrong with me or my life and vice versa. It's just a mutual self-hate fest, I guess. And having conversations with friends who are really interested and, you know, want to know about my experience and feeling like, well, I just read the book. But, you know, I say a few things. But also then the conversation veers back to the comfort zone of, well, now let me tell you about this thing that I really need to complain about, and here's how bad of a parent I am or how bad of a whatever I am or why I can't do this thing that I really want to do. And that has been challenging to sit with because I just really want to get off the phone. I'm like, this is boring.
Yes.
I don't want to do what we've always done. This doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
It's going to feed me.
Right.
So that's
been hard. Two things there, right? It's boring, and it really doesn't feel good. It's just such an energy suck, right? So I want to connect with you, and because I'm going to enjoy that, and then we sit there and do this mutual complaining, what's wrong with everything, and inside I'm having my opinions about you. And, of course, you're having your opinions about me, although we don't address that. And and probably I'm not aware that you're doing the same thing about me that I'm doing about you, because that's not part of the equation. And then we separate, and the energy is just gone. And possibly during that time we ate too much or drank too much of whatever wasn't good for us. And, you know, it's just, you just wind up feeling awful instead of that open, warm, loving connection that you were hoping to have.
Yeah. And that's just a prime example of one of the key ways that I feel like the shift in me and the person that I'm connecting to today is feeling like she's in a foreign land and she's like, hey, what is this place? Like, I don't feel like I fit into this structure that you've built the way that I used to. On the flip side, I noticed that instantly my connection with my 16-year-old son is just wildly better. I feel like it's so palpable to me that the energy between us has shifted. because I'm not looking at him through the lens of anxiety and fear and judgment and are you okay and how are you doing? Because if you're not okay, it's a reflection of me because I'm a bad parent. And instead, I'm just like enjoying him. And I see the lightness of his being as a result of my just enjoying being around him. So that's been really cool.
Yes, really cool. And interesting, because at 16, I would guess that there's some truth to what I'm getting ready to say. He's in between, right? Mm-hmm. He knows he's headed toward adulthood and it's inevitable.
Yeah.
And yet he's still so in touch with, really? Why? It doesn't look like you people are having fun. You know,
right.
if I may buy this, but it's not a good sales presentation. And so when you come to him from that place, from presence, really, from a place of, I'm not living in my head about the future and everything that's wrong, and we're just here right now, he can really relate to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's exactly what it is, because it wasn't anything that I externally did or said differently, necessarily.
Right.
It was more just, my beingness around him felt lighter, and I felt more ready to see him for, like, this amazing person that he is instead of this what is it
extension
that you need
of
to work
you?
On? Because I'm going to point it out. Right. I'll figure out what it is, and then we'll get you what you need to work on that thing. And I look back on, like, that's what I've done to myself my whole life and the people around me, and not super fun. Not super fun at all.
No, it's not, because it's such a clear message that there's something wrong with you. We're not sure what it is, right?
Right.
The only thing we know is there's something wrong with you. We're going to figure it out, and then we'll figure out what to do about it. And to realize that whole premise is completely bogus.
Yeah. Which has also brought me, you know, some sadness to think about.
Don't do it.
Yeah.
Don't do that. Yeah.
I do it for a second, and then I go, okay, you know, this is a like a
trap
door.
Yeah, I don't want to do that.
And I'm going to fall into it really fast.
Yeah, and you land in hell. Yeah.
Exactly.
I've been catching that a lot. Go ahead.
I've been catching it. There's these moments that I catch it when it's happening. You know, I'm sitting there and I'm going, oh, Autumn, you're such a good meditator. Look at you. I catch it and I'm like, oh, trap. Or when I find myself going, oh, Autumn, isn't it so tragic that you lost all those years? I'm like, oh, trap door. And so I'm finding myself catching it as it's happening. So that's been cool and fun to watch.
Okay.
But, yeah, it's been a total – go ahead.
Well, just an encouragement to make lots of recordings about those insights. You know, the trap door and what it is and how you get there, where the handle is.
Yeah.
And, you don't want to do that, and no conversations about the past, nothing wrong with the past, no conversations about the future, we don't need to worry about the future, this is, right now, this is enough, it's plenty, and oh, by the way, there aren't even any problems.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's a good thing to see. All right, well, thank you for letting us know, that is so exciting, I'm very happy for you and for your son.
Thank you. Me too.
Yeah. All right. Well, as we say, go happy.
Thank you. Go happy too. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us. Autumn, that was fabulous. I loved hearing about the traps, Sherry. That's great. Oh, that's trap.
Yeah.
Yep. That's a trap.
Yeah. Trap door. Trap door.
Trap door. Come back here. Come back here.
Great.
Great. Great. And we have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Steve.
Hello,
hey, Steve.
Can you hear me okay? Hi, I just got back from the retreat as well, and it was my second retreat, so it's doubly special for me. I would have gone to like an advanced, there's nothing wrong with you, like something like there's really, really nothing wrong with you, as I was telling Jim.
Uh-huh. There's nothing wrong with you.
Yeah. So, yeah.
But we don't have one.
No. So anyway, it was still totally, it was just really amazing. I, you know, it was interesting. Maybe I was a bit more relaxed in the workshop because I was, you know, wasn't expecting anything to be the same, but I was just more comfortable with it. And I just went did the work more, maybe a little less resistance. And I just felt I went deeper into the work and let go of a lot of stuff.
That's a really good point, Steve, because most people who do that retreat are with us for the first time. That place is like a foreign country, right? And no matter how much people have traveled, they've never encountered anything like that place, right? And then there's this, but I have no idea what's coming next, right? And so the level of sort of anxiety that's just natural in a circumstance like that dictates to a degree how much we're able to just let go and be present to what's going on. But the second time around, they're not going to throw you off of a building or into an icy pool or something. And so, I shouldn't have given that away, huh? And so you can really relax and, as you say, go deeper into the world. You're right.
Yeah.
And it kind of feels good in these temperatures.
But, yeah. Well, and the other thing I was going to say. Oh, go ahead, sorry, Sherry.
Oh, that's just that you can go deeper because you're not. There isn't that sort of a barrier of I'm a little bit tensed up against whatever might come next.
Yeah. I was going to say too, if anybody hasn't done the retreat. That's listening, that's thinking about it. I was just so in awe of how kind and compassionate and present to everybody that was there, that Jen and Ashwini were. It was truly inspiring to me that I want to be more present to people in my life just by learning by example. They just set such a wonderful example. And so,
it's true. It is true. I think that it's funny. When they first encounter the monastery, and to some degree our practice, but especially at the monastery, there's this feeling of, wow, there are a lot of rules here, right? And we quickly jump in and say, no, we actually don't have rules. We have a lot of guidelines. We have a lot of things that just make it possible for all of us to function here together. And within that, I do believe that maybe the happiest place on earth is the kindest place.
Yeah, and it creates so much safety as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, good. So we might see you at a different kind of retreat in the future, or you never know, we might see you at another, there's nothing wrong with your retreat.
Either one would be perfect for whenever that opportunity comes up, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, it's really true because whatever happens, you'll be where you are at that time. The retreat will be wherever it is. Life will be wherever it is. It'll be a whole new world. And so in that way, we can't lose.
I do have a question. I'm not sure if I'm going to go over my time. I can save it for another call. It's up to you guys.
Oh, that's okay. I bet we're fine.
I have some content that I dove right into the day after I got home. I went to my wife and I said to Janine, let's go out to Banff for a drive. And we listened to this book that she was telling me about. She's been a vegetarian for years and became vegan about a year ago. And I followed her example about 3 years ago, became a vegetarian. And so the book was called Eating Animals. And by the time we got back, it was an audio book. And by the time we got back, we were through chapter 6 and we were both quite devastated. And
By what, Steve?
By the content of it, how cruel the animal industry is, the animal food industry is to animals and all that. And so you know, but I really struggle with the idea of I want to focus my attention away from the suffering component of it, and yet I don't want to be ignorant to what's going on, because I've taken some steps myself personally to, you know, to cause less cruelty to animals, and hopefully by setting an example for other people, maybe they'll change too. And, it's just, I don't know. I constantly struggle with how to be kind to myself around it and still pay attention and know what's going on.
Well, yeah. And I mean, for me, now this is just for me, I don't need any more information.
Right.
Right. I think it was Thoreau who said, once you understand the principle, you don't need example after example. So it's hideous. It's absolutely hideous. And so what might a person do then? Well, it doesn't mean we can't support people who are trying to make a difference in that arena. Right?
Right.
Whatever that is, whatever we find out, you know, however we find that to be. So we can take steps to alleviate some of the cruelty and suffering. To me, it's just not helpful to continue to immerse ourselves in how awful things can be. Let's focus on. You might find a, and I'm sure you know about all these things, you know, a sanctuary that takes creatures that would otherwise be killed, or saves creatures from slaughterhouses, or whatever it is. You might want to volunteer there or support them, or whatever. It's the starfish story, you know. Okay, so it's only one cow, but hey, it really works for that one cow.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because otherwise, it's just depressing, and it doesn't lead to anything except depression.
Yeah. And I don't want to suffer.
Pardon me?
I'm done with that. I'm done with suffering.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Which is not turning, I think this is your point, it's not turning a blind eye. So it's not, I'm done with suffering, so I'm just going to turn my diet over to eating creatures. That's not the point, right?
Right.
Yeah, that's not it. I want to do everything I can to be as kind as I can to everything in life, every aspect of life. And that's a full-time focus, right? There's really no time and energy left over for focusing on hatefulness and cruelty and insensitivity and all those sorts of things. The kindness is really a full-time job.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Sherry. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
Take good care.
Thanks for joining us, Steve. And Sherry, I really appreciated that kindness, full-time job. And that can be my focus, and it'll play out in different ways, in different situations, in different content. And yet it provides an anchor from which sort of clarity of action, if any, is becomes more apparent to me.
Yes. Yeah. So we have that saying, what is most compassionate for all? And of course, that's something we can only have a sense of in presence. So that there's one answer, center. Center is we know it is. It's the kindest place we can be. It's the most compassionate, the most generous, the most loving. And so that's why with practice, that is our full-time job. Right, to get to that place of loving kindness, and from there engage, participate in life.
Yes. Sherry, on Steve's call, you were a little bit underwater occasionally, and you're crystal clear now. So I'll let
that
you know
wild?
If it comes back.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Wild.
Yeah, it seems like I can never tell, is it me in the morning? Is it Ashwini? Is it me? Is it is it Jen at the monastery? Is it? I don't know.
Yeah,
this country living, what can I say?
Yes. And we're going to hear from our sponsor, Sherry, and then we'll come back and talk with more callers.
All right.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart. And one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air, and Sherry, we have another caller here. Sherry, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Sherry, I can. Oh, there you are. There you are.
Oh, we thought we had technology problems before.
That was
right.
A close call.
Huh?
Okay, ready to go?
Ready.
All right. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Kelsey in Santa Rosa.
Kelsey also did the retreat last week.
I also did the retreat, and it was also my second time, and it was really different the second time. It was just like I felt like I got to a whole different layer of stuff that was more subtle. The first time I came, I was still spinning from, you know, my marriage ending, and, you know, a lot of that stuff was still so up. And this time, it was interesting, just like I discovered things like how a positive belief can be just as limiting as a negative one in some ways. Like, if, you know, things you're told as a child, like, that you take in it's just interesting, just, you know, you don't, that was one little aspect, which it was just one of the things.
That is such a great and subtle point, isn't it? Because
it's because it was supposed to be this good thing, but then you feel all this pressure because of it, or maybe you know, then you think you're not good at other things that aren't like that thing, or, you know, and an identity gets built around it, and so yeah, that was a really good thing to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the you can be anything you want to be, you can do anything you want to do. You know, it's the kind of thing people say to kids, and then it's like, okay, well, I'd like to be an astronaut.
And, actually, my dad told me that when I was 7 or something, as you know, a little girl. Like, now, for women, now I could be any, and it actually scared me. It was just like, I'm not even sure what that's about, but it just scared me. Because I guess it made me feel like I would just be out there all on my own, or, you know, or how would I do that? It was not, for some reason, a liberating thing to hear.
Yeah. Well, and you knew that at 7.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Because it just,
which
yeah,
is really
like,
interesting.
Yeah.
That feels like a lot of pressure.
Yeah, it did, and it also just gave me a sense, I don't know, somehow, of being, you know, alone in life. Like, I would have to do it all myself. I don't know. It was interesting. But
well, because what's so often doesn't accompany those kinds of messages when we're kids is, and I'll help you. I'll support
yes,
you in that.
I felt like that was it, and that was a lot of it, and I also think just at that age, a lot of my needs weren't being met, and being the age I am and the culture we're in, there was the whole idea that, you know, you could get married and then somebody would take care of you or something. So I had this idea, well, I'm not getting it now, but I'll get it later, you know. So I think that was part of it too.
Mm-hmm.
But it was...
So some beliefs and assumptions got a light shown on them.
They did, yes. Yeah, and I just kept... Yeah, and there was just like a positive energy that really built. At the same time, it was great because a lot of things come up there, you know, that where you get to see what your mind does in real time. That's one of the great things about the guidelines, because I tend to be, I guess I could be diagnosed ADD. I don't really like that because I don't like either deficit or disorder. But you know, just realizing that when I was feeling that stuff, that was coming from me. That wasn't coming from anybody outside of me, because it's a place where it's just so clear that...
That if it's one where people often talk about feeling like they're being watched.
Yes, and when you're actually not being watched.
Right, except we're being watched by that system inside the head, right?
Right.
Projecting.
I think,
well, they think that, and she thinks that, and he thinks that, and they're doing that. And in all that quiet, suddenly you realize, wait a minute, everything that I'm experiencing is happening inside my head.
That's right.
And there's nobody else
And if somebody needs to remind me something, it's a reminder. It's not, oh, you bad person who forgot to do this. You know, it was.
Right. Yeah. It's helpful.
Very.
Punishing.
Yes, mm-hmm. It is. Yeah.
In a way.
And just realize sometimes people have to remind you or tell you things.
Yeah.
And
but
it doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you. It's just like.
That's right.
You know. And it was helpful to be in a place like, you know, I got all the way up for the meditation hall. My socks weren't there. And, you know, I just made a recording. It's like, you forgot your socks. That's it. There doesn't say anything about you.
That's all that happened.
That's all that happened.
It doesn't mean anything.
And I really learned that the way to be kind to myself is give myself plenty of time to do things. I thought I would get there and sit early. Well, instead, I still had time to go get my socks and come back and not be like, running and all frantic over it.
Right. Right. Yes. And to get to see how conditioning can set us up in those ways. Right? So I'm doing whatever it is that I'm doing, and I'm distracted perhaps. And maybe I even think about socks. I'll need size. Oh, you have socks up there. There's an unhelpful voice in the head. And then I get there, and I don't have socks, but I haven't given myself enough time to get there. So now I'm frantic and urgent and hysterical.
Leaving for work.
And not having socks feels like a sin.
Yes, right. Yeah, it's the same. Just if you leave yourself only enough time for the drive to work, and then you just happen to hit every red light on the way.
That's right.
And
it's your fault.
Right, that's it.
Because you should have left earlier.
Right, and now that's just like, but I'm starting to get
late.
The voice. It's like, let's just always allow plenty of time and add some extra.
Mm-hmm. And that in that extra time, you just breathe and feel your shoulders drop and your stomach relax. And
yes, because I notice, when I'm hurrying, my whole body is tight. It's like, you're not going to be able to do it any faster by tensing every muscle.
Right. In fact,
you're less, probably will do it more slowly.
Yeah.
You just start dropping things.
Great.
I just want to share one thing that was really cool coming back, because when the callers was talking about like listening to the love songs, like they were kind of, you know, instead of between two people to yourself. And my son was home for one day after I got back, and he has struggled a lot with depression. He had gave us a wild ride in his childhood, always expelled or suspended, and went in juvenile hall, had drug things. But he was playing me these songs he'd been writing, and he wrote one it was kind of to music, but it's clearly to the part of himself that writes the music, and he's singing this song, and it's like, just some of the words, feeling that serenity when you're standing next to me. I mean it when I say, you're out of this world to me, and everything you do just puts my mind at ease. You mean it when you say, I'm out of this world to you. No matter what happens, we'll always make it through. And I was just, because I've been listening to the tape, it's like, oh my God, that's mentor. That's like being in touch with a mentor. And I just said, can I record it? And I put it on my recorder, and it's a reggae song, and I just love, in the morning when I'm listening to my recordings, I listen to, there's other great words like that too, but
yeah.
I just, it was like, it was so fun to sing this song, and it just kind of clicked, wow, that's just like talking to the mentor. And and I said to him, you know, you might want to record that for yourself, and when you feel depressed, you think of that. You think of that's that part of you singing to, and it's going to protect you from all those bad thoughts. And I gave him a Make America Kind Again cap, and it was just such a nice visit.
Oh,
and it
that's
was just
wonderful.
It just filled my heart. I feel like if he's in touch with that part of himself, that I think he's going to be okay. You know, he's already come
yeah.
through all that stuff and changed
yeah.
so much, but he's like 22
yeah.
now, and to see him stepping into himself and taking responsibility and
taking care of himself.
Taking care of himself. And he wrote a song for a friend who had committed suicide and posted it, and his friends were contacting him. The boy's mother contacted him, and he's in touch. He calls to see how she's doing, and she wanted a copy for her mother. And it's just the thing that made me feel when he was a child that he'd get through all that dark stuff, and he had this amazing heart, and to see him out in the world just being that person is
yeah. Well, and
amazing.
You know, Guilty, those often go together. It's that amazing heart that it
that's
so
exactly what I thought. When he was being angry
yeah.
and acting out, is like, I know it's because he feels so vulnerable
yeah.
because he loves so deeply.
Yeah.
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 yeah. yeah. So that was
well,
just
I'm
the double
happy
like
for both of
icing
you.
On the cake. And
happy
yeah,
for both of you.
Was so well. Anybody who is thinking about doing the workshop, I just so highly recommend it. And if you're thinking about doing
good.
It again, it, it's just so great.
Better the second time, and it's great.
Better,
it
is. It's better. It's better the second time because you've taken
yeah.
off that layer of really hateful stuff, and then you can get to some other kinds of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah.
And I know your facilitators encourage you to call into the radio show, so I'm really pleased that you're all doing that because it's very fun to hear from you.
Yeah, and I
so
did
thank
it
you.
Last time, so yeah.
See,
and
better
thank
the second
you.
Time.
It is. Thank you so much, and thank you,
you
Michael,
so
and Jen, and Ashwini.
You're welcome.
All right.
Go happy.
Gosho. You too.
Gosho.
Thanks for joining us, Kelsey. Great to hear about the fruits of practice, Sherry, and
yeah.
how that plays out. It's the ripple effects of that. It's very beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And we have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Christina from Southern California.
Well, hello, Christina.
I didn't think I'd get on. I'm so happy I did.
Yeah.
It's like a reunion. Everyone who was there
yes.
last week.
That's true. That's true. And you were there in a different capacity and
yes.
there nonetheless. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And I'll be brief because I was on the morning show. I guess it was yesterday. But, you know, I do want to talk about well, I only got to hear a little bit of what Meg and Jen were talking about, but I made a recording the day before. I think it was the day we left, yeah, because it was after we had group at the monastery on Friday night. So on Saturday morning, I made a recording, and it was, you know, a love recording to myself. And I've been finding it so useful to listen to it in the morning. I woke up in the middle of the night one night, and I put it on, and Well, I didn't put it on right away, but I couldn't fall back asleep. And then I thought, oh, put on the recording. And as soon as I did, I fell back asleep. And I just find it so supportive. And what I really want to say about that, not only the practice of listening, making the recordings and then listening to them, but that there were pieces of that recording that came from other stewards and visiting monks who were speaking on, in group, and just mm-hmm. their presence, who'd gone through what I had just gone through, and even though I didn't participate in the speaking that night, I was so moved by what was said, and it was so perfect for me, and what I wanted to say to myself, what I wanted to hear myself saying to me. And it's just mm-hmm. indicative of the power of Sangha and moving through this wild thing we call life together with people who are doing it too and who are committed in the same way you are and come, from a place of loving kindness. And just mm-hmm. to be enveloped in that at the monastery and to be in a working environment, in a kitchen that, everyone there is practicing at a really high level. I mean, it just carries you through. And I'm so grateful for that. No program on the planet could be devised to meet you exactly where you are like this. I mean, so I'm just so, so grateful.
I hear you. And so for people who don't really know how it works, so some of the folks we've already heard from today were there doing the retreat, and then there were other people there who are visiting monks, right? I think all of them were there for a month this time. And then there were the stewards who came in and were extra support because there's a ton to be done. Right when the yeah. when the place is full of folks, and so they're parallel tracks, right? So they're the folks who are going through the There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat, and then there's this other group of people who are you're having your own group discussions. You sit together and have group discussions and that sort of thing, right? On your own schedule, and what you're doing while they're in workshop sessions is you'll be in the kitchen cooking, or you're maintaining the place in whatever way, making sure the bathrooms are spiff and all of that sort of thing, and the porches are swept. And it's that experience of being in Sangha that you're referring to, right? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's just lovely because it takes all of it. And I just want to say really quickly, with a shout out to the kitchen, my husband and my kids are always so happy when I come back to the monastery to see me, but also because I go on a baking frenzy and a cooking frenzy and I'm shopping and the amount of energy that gets created there and like come home, I'm like, oh, we got to bake bread for the week. I got to make muffins for the week. We have to have all the veggies chopped.
Uh-huh.
It's so great.
It is.
So
it's inspiring. It's inspiring. Yeah. And the thing that I get from listening to you, it's fun.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
It just shows us what's possible when we are not stuck in that stuff in the head that keeps us from participating in this wild ride we call life. And right, and the other point that you're making is stick with Sangha, right?
Yeah.
Because those are the people you want to go with. There are lots of people in the world, but the ones you want to go with are the people who are also practicing, because then when we step into a hole, which is inevitable, there are going to be a lot of folks who didn't step in that hole and can kind of help us out and get us moving. And then at some point, they're going to step in that hole because everybody does, and we'll be there to help them. And it's a really good deal.
Yeah, it is a really good deal.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Sherry.
All right.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Christina.
Bye. Gosho.
Gosho.
Thanks for joining us, Christina. And yeah, the Sangha experience, Sherry, it feels like I do very little work and I get 10 times to 100 times back from Sangha.
Mm.
And it's just such a powerful experience. It's as you were just describing with Christina.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. Yeah, there's just kind of nothing like it.
Yes. Yes.
And we can see why when the Buddha set up practice, that's how he set it up. There's the practice, there's the awakening or the clarity, the seeing, and there are the people that you practice with, right? Because without people, a community to practice with, nobody would do it.
Right.
That was what he realized. So he didn't say, you know, what's really important is these teachings that I'm giving you and that you practice them and that you wake up and end suffering. There, that's the end of it. He also said, and there'll be a group of people for you to practice with. You won't have to go it alone.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, fabulous.
Yeah.
And we have time for at least one more caller here, Sherry.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Joyce. I have a big smile on my face.
Hi, Joyce.
Hello, Joyce.
Hi. This has just been one of the most amazing things I've listened to in, well, I don't know. It's just amazing. And people that I'm acquainted with, where their practice is, it just raised my practice.
It's inspiring.
Beyond. Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep, it is.
Yeah, and I've been in a pretty dark place, or I think as I said to someone the other day, I was kind of in outer space, actually. And one of the things that I have been away for about a week, and I have no idea what I was going to say about that. But I've been away for a week, and what I discovered is that it seems like conditioning is part of another person that I know, and I'm always trying to make that person pleased with what I do.
Ooh. There's an image. And let me guess, the next part of that is that person is never pleased?
Right. It seems that way.
Yeah.
And what cracked it open was that we had been away together, and I returned, plane landed where the car was, and you know it was late at night, and I was to drive the car home, because when the other person returns, they're returning with somebody else, and they'll take them home, And I was tired, I've been in pain, I haven't been sleeping very well, and I knew that I should not get in that car and drive. And then I heard repeated, it's very close to home, it's only an hour and a half, you can do this. And so I did.
Uh-huh.
And on the way home, three different times I drove off the road. Now, this is it's late at night. There's not a lot of cars on the road. I knew I was tired. I stayed in the right lane. And there was a great big shoulder over there. You know, first time my front tire went off, and it's like, whoa, boy, I better pay attention. Next time, the whole car was off, and the next time I was probably 15 feet from the road. Pulled myself together, just slowly got back on, you know, I don't think it was slowly. And even saying that now seemed the insanity to me, seemed the unkindness in that, because I couldn't afford to get a motel room to stay and not put myself in that position. It just cracked this so wide open that I was dumbfounded. I'm home alone. I've been doing things, and I'm almost speechless.
Well, you know, Joyce, that system that was your companion on the drive home is the one that we call self-hate.
Yeah.
And when we talk about self-hate would happily kill you, it doesn't matter. You know, there's this belief that people have that, well, that's crazy. Ego doesn't want to kill me, because then what would happen to ego? It would die too. But if you're Buddhist, the understanding of that is, no, actually it wouldn't. Karma just goes right on. It's viruses don't cease to exist because the human being dies, right? And so if they did, we could get ahead of the game here. Right? Sorry. So to understand that, no, that's not the case. I mean, it could be an accidental death because it might not have actually intended for you to die on that drive home. But if you did, it wouldn't really matter. And if you didn't, then there's just so much fodder. There's just so much to be used. You know, you can just be beaten and humiliated and tortured. And, I mean, it's a party. It's a party for that system. And to realize that.
And I experienced some of that. Yeah.
Yeah. And to realize that's what's going on and that's what the stakes are, you know, that behooves us not to play along with it, not to go along with it. But it sadly, and I was going to say sadly, it takes a lot for most people to really catch on. And that system is so entrenched for most people that what I'm going to say next just goes right past, which is, we need recordings so that we remember that when we start hearing voices talk to us about things that, you can do it. It's not going to be a problem. It's close. It's only an hour and a half. You can do it. Come on. What? Yeah. That we start to recognize what that voice is, and we refuse to go along with it.
I like the way you put that.
Yeah, the same way is if it's an external person who is telling you, no, go ahead, you can jump off of that. It's not that high. Go ahead. You'll probably be fine. You know, lots of people jumped off of that. They didn't break anything. You would say, I don't want to. I choose not. No, I'm not playing that game. I'm not playing the "oh, you'll probably be okay" game. Those are not the odds I want to bet on. Okay? I choose this human being, and I choose this human being's well-being. So no, we're not doing that. And those recordings will help you remember it, help you get clear about what voice is what, and which ones you want to be listening to, and which ones you don't want to be listening to, because they're not on your side. Okay?
Yes, thank you. And as simple as that is, that never entered, well, I did not recognize it ever entering my mind.
That's right. And that's right. And
no.
the reason for that is that you don't do it. Because if you did it, it would occur to you.
Yeah.
You with me?
And it would, yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah. And it would break the pattern. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. But we have to do it. We have to do it even when we don't want to, when we don't feel like it, when it doesn't have anything to do with anything. Right? I'm not in a life-threatening position. There's nothing going on. I still want to be listening to recordings that are kind and compassionate to the human being, that don't support those nasty voices. That's what I want to be listening to. So when the nasty voices come in, no doubt about it, I recognize them. Nope, I don't listen to you. You're not the voices I listen to. Okay?
Yes, that's a start.
You got it. All right.
Finally.
Very good. All right. Thanks, Joyce.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Joyce. And another amazing conversation, Sherry, and another great open air.
Not bad, huh? It was a good time.
It's amazing to me how many different aspects of practice can be included in 1 hour or 1 hour and 10 minutes. It's fabulous.
Yeah, it is. It's very good. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And go happy.
Go happy.
Okay. Good night.